Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, welcome into the bullpen. We've been off for 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, Sean was in Austin for the glorious orange and white game. And then last week, my wife and I took in a comedy show. Nate Bargatze was at the NRG Arena, fun show. Really great comedian. Check him out on Netflix if you haven't already. But we're back this week, and we're actually plus one. Not only is Sean Meigs here, not only am I here, Brian McDonald, our man, Johnny Bellmer behind the glass, but for the first time, Cam Smith on Twitter at Clutch City Cam here at the desk with us. Cam, welcome to the show, man.
Appreciate it, guys. Glad to be here.
So it's we got a lot of takes to get in between the four of us. It's going to be tough to fit it in 2 hours. I know it's really going to be tough to fit it in, especially since we all have thoughts on the Kendrick Lamar, Drake, Rick Ross. Who else is involved in this end? The Weeknd? I mean, ASAP Rocky, I think, is
ASAP Rocky got it the worst.
So, I mean, I think we could spend the entire 2 hours trying to break down the timeline and of that feud, but we will trudge on and actually talk sports here for a little bit, and that's because the Astros maybe have restored. My voice keeps going up to maybe convey my skepticism, but the Astros have maybe restored some faith. They were just a couple days ago. They were 10-20, 10 games under 500. They've now won 5 of 6, swept the Rockies, which, I mean, the Rockies suck, but it was 2 games in Mexico City where the pitching could have fallen apart because of the elevation, but they still pitched well. Then you take 2 of 3 from the Cleveland Guardians, who I believe were leading the American League with their record at the time of the series start. And then you take one from the Mariners, who have a much better record than you as well. So, Sean, I mean, I guess we'll start with the obvious. Is this 5 out of 6 game stretch with a couple credible opponents in here restored any of the faith that we've lost over the first month and a week?
A little bit of the faith. This was a week where the Astros get up off the mat. They're down. They're out.
Yeah, I like that. Get off the mat. Are we talking like a boxing or a wrestling reference?
There's a 2 count.
Yeah, and then a kick. Okay.
And now they're back up. I do think that, I don't know if they're going to be a team that wins 6 out of every 7 games that they play.
I just need them to get over 92.5, Sean. That's what you and I need.
We need a bad. Oh man, I haven't even.
Cam, there's a bet on that.
I haven't reckoned. Wow. With the idea I might get my money back.
I've long dismissed the idea that you, Joe, and I will actually make money on that bet.
But this is a team that for a lot of the year has looked, I mean, just
lifeless,
and beyond the play on the field, just like actually the way that this team carries themselves, it was a little bit scary because it was like, no, normally the Astros at least go down fighting. And this was a week where they showed not only they're going down fighting, but they're still
coming back in games.
Yeah, they're still a good baseball team at the end of the day. As much counter evidence as there was the first 30 games of the season, I think they've kind of gained back some of that trust.
Look, sometimes you just have to get out of town, clear your mind.
Go to Mexico
and everything's all good. But I mean, we've seen this before.
I think that's the plot of one of the Hangover movies, is it not?
Hangover 2.
Yeah,
they go to Thailand.
I think that's close enough.
I think the third one might be related to Mexico.
All 3 movies are the exact same plot. They just changed the location.
But look, we've seen this before. Historically, the Astros start slow. Obviously, this year it was a little slower. It probably was more compacted because of pitching injuries and the fact that they didn't address a lot of like the positional needs we thought they would. But they're turning around offensively. There's no more of these like 8 games, 1 game, and then scoring 1 run the next 3 games. Like they're consistently hitting now. So I think it was just a slower start, but we've seen it before, like I said. So you just got to buckle up and just go along with the ride.
So, I mean, let's get into last night's game a little bit, though. 5-3 win over the Mariners in game one of the series. You got two more coming up this weekend, today and tomorrow. Rennell Blanco on the mound. Hey, he was good again. Six innings, three earned runs, which, you know, once upon a time, we cared about that a lot when Framber Valdez was going through the great quality start streak of 2022. But Rennell Blanco, I mean, he went six innings, three earned runs, and he raised his ERA to 2.09. Blanco, I think, without a doubt, has been the best story of the season so far, Sean. I mean, I don't know how far, or like, I think last season, you, Andrew, and I, when like JP France was going through a great stretch to start his run as an Astro, we kept saying, especially Andrew, I know, was like, well, let's see.
Every week we're waiting for the shooter drop.
Yeah. Do you have that same concern with Rennell Blanco, or are you starting to think maybe this is not real in so much that he's going to have a 2.09 ERA for the full season? That's unrealistic.
I don't think he's going to win the Cy Young, no.
Or the Cy Young, right. But do you think he can be a guy that you count on giving you quality starts, I use in air quotes, for the rest of the season, be like a consistent quality four starter?
Yeah, because that last part is exactly what they need. They need now, at this point, with the pitching getting more healthy, the pitching staff getting more healthy, that's what the Astros need him to be, is a quality fourth starter. And so far throughout the season, he's been basically their ace. He's been the most consistent presence in the Astros rotation, giving you great production, has been Rennell Blanco. So for him to now be in a lesser role, not even a lesser role, it's just now you have...
Verlander and Framber come back.
Yeah, you have Framber, Verlander, you have Javier coming back
soon-ish,
next week.
Probably. Yeah, he's going to have a rehab start in Corpus. Yeah, and then it sounds like it may just be a one game rehab stint, and then he comes back. Cam, what are your thoughts so far, Rennell Blanco, this season?
I mean, he's over exceeding expectations, and I think the thing with JP France was last year that you had actual expectations from him. With Rennell Blanco, it was like, oh, we're hella hurt. We just need you to fill in the gap. And he's doing way more than just that. So if he's giving you what he's giving you now, when he slides back into the fourth or fifth rotation spot, I mean, damn.
Yeah. No, look, if everyone pitches at, I guess, kind of their level, and so far, Blanco not included in this, but starting with the top three in the rotation, Verlander, Framber, and Javier, all of their ERAs and all of their numbers have been really, really good. They've been at classic level, so to speak. So if you're adding Rennell Blanco, even if his ERA maybe returns to the norm or returns to the mean like you would expect, and maybe it's, I don't know, let's say 325 the rest of the season, that in your fourth spot, I mean, that you add that to Verlander, Framber, and Javier, might mean you have the best rotation in the league.
Yeah, I mean... I've always thought that this question about the starting pitching depth and everyone always looking at, you know, June, July, where it's like, oh, that's when the reinforcements come, and that's when the Astros will have too much pitching.
Yeah, relying on Lance McCullers coming back is such fool's gold.
And a guy coming off Lance McCullers, and then another guy coming off
the guy coming up Tommy John feels like the more reliable option.
Yeah,
because the other one is Lance McCullers, and he hasn't pitched in 2 years.
Yeah, and it reminded me of early in the Rocket season where people were kind of like worried about how are they going to break up all the minutes between all these guys, and
it'll work out.
It'll work itself out, guys. The trust me, this team is not going to have too many good starting pitchers. That's not an issue.
They're not going to have five young candidates. Like, so things will happen.
Then, where do we put the sixth one?
Yeah, and that was a lot of the conversation. I mean, I think that was some of the conversation people like fooled themselves into during the offseason. I know, especially like last year. Like, remember what the people were saying when Verlander left to go to the Mets last offseason? Oh, we don't need him. We got seven starters.
Yeah.
No, you don't. That's not the reality of baseball. Guys are going to get hurt, and sure enough, like right off the bat, like 2 weeks in the season, Urquidy gone, Lance is never came back, and Luis Garcia went out with a Tommy John, and boom, half those guys are gone.
It's quality over quantity. So even when McCullers comes back, don't put his ass in that starting rotation, because that
he's going to be in the rotation when he comes back. I mean, spoiler alert.
But they could set it up to where they basically have...
They could piggyback them.
Yeah, they have the last... Whoever the last two guys in the rotation are, if we're going to go with this six or seven headed monster.
Like if it ends up being like if they go back to a 5-man rotation at some point, I do expect them to go to 6-man for a little while because they only have like one day off in like a 28-day stretch coming up. I think it's just in a week or so. But I think if they get to back to a 5-man rotation to close the season, I think you're going to see, obviously, Verlander, Fromber, Javier, Blanco's earned that fourth role. And then maybe you piggyback Urquidy and Lance McCullers Jr., assuming he's back, and we'll see what happens with Luis Garcia. But, yeah, I mean, it'll be a fun problem to have. I just think ever relying or ever trying to guarantee the idea in your mind, like, oh, you've got this amazing depth and overabundance of starting pitching. It's just not a reality in baseball. The other aspect of last night's game I want to get into, the bullpen goes three scoreless, including Ryan Pressly and Josh Hader, who obviously had a rough start to the season, but you know, both scoreless last night. I believe Hader had two strikeouts, Pressly one, so it was nice to see them maybe return to the consistent level that you expected. But I think the star of the bullpen so far, Seth Martinez, I mean, I don't know if everyone even expected him to make the roster when spring training started back in February, but now you're looking at him as your best middle reliever. Hell, his ERA after scoreless inning last night is 1.96. I don't know how long this lasts for, but what are your overall feelings, Sean, with the bullpen? Maybe Hader, maybe Pressly turning it around, and then Seth Martinez emerging as a reliable arm. And how we haven't mentioned Montero, who has had a better season than last year as well.
Yeah, Montero and Martinez being, for Montero, decent because there's still some.
He's had a few hiccups. Yeah,
yeah, and Martinez, who for a while it seemed like his role was to come in the second inning when the Astros were down 8-0. I'm glad he's now graduated to being able to pitch with a lead, and he's earned it because he's really been good. And part of the Astros' issues early in the season was this bullpen that we all thought was going to be this great strength, even with the doubts that we had with the middle relief. We thought that the back end was going to be what carries this team. And for so much of it, the back end was actually part of the problem. And
part of the problem early in the season.
That was something that the Astros couldn't abide by. So having Pressly seemingly figure it out, at least the last week or so being good, Josh Hader coming into his own, and then now getting those reinforcements, or not reinforcements, but getting the performances that you want in the middle relief, that is something that, again, can take this team from being an absolute garbage dumpster fire to maybe being able to achieve some of the goals that we had for them.
Like 92, over 92 and a half. Also, I think that's what everyone's hoping for.
Just make the play.
Also, by the way, nobody else in our division has been lighting it up either.
That
so
helps.
Yeah, that's true.
It absolutely helps.
And Nathan Eovaldi just got hurt for the Rangers.
Yep.
So, I don't expect them. I mean, they already had, obviously, starting pitcher problems and Cam Way here in the bullpen in a second. But they already had starting pitching problems with Max Scherzer. And I'm forgetting DeGrom. The guy that never pitches.
DeGrom.
Jacob DeGrom. He never pitches. I forgot his name. He's
the legend.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Oh, we thought our roster, our pitching rotation was depleted. I mean, the Rangers is just like another atmosphere.
They already had two, like arguably their two most expensive arms out. And now Nathan Eovaldi has got a groin injury. I'm not sure how long he's going to be out. And he's always been a guy, when you look at his baseball reference page, there aren't very many seasons on there where he's got like 20 plus starts. Like he's been a guy that starts like 12 to 15 games, and hey, it's May 4th and already he's hurt. So this may be a problem for the Rangers that continues on, because that's kind of been the track record of the guys that are depending upon.
Yeah, and I'm sure in Arlington they're thinking the same thing of like, hey, this starting rotation.
as soon as you get him back.
Once you get in July, you know, Jacob DeGrom, he can only pitch a half season anyway. Might as well be the second half. Maybe he's healthy for the playoffs.
Oh, God, if we hear, like, Jacob DeGrom was our trade deadline accusation, I will be so mad. Because you know someone's going to say that, and I hate when people say it.
For sure.
Cam, what are your thoughts on the bullpen?
I mean, similar to kind of like the slow start with the offense, I mean, I think, obviously, we're used to the offense being off to a slow start in past years, so I think the bullpen getting off to a slow start was a little more nerve-wracking for us. But, I mean, it happens, and you look at Pressly and Hader, and they've been consistently good and really good the last, like, you know, few years. So you figured it was just kind of one of those, okay, what's our role? Because Presley's always been the closer, Hader was always the closer on previous teams, and then you put them together, and it's kind of like, what's going to happen here? So I think they kind of found their rhythm just like the offense. And I think once every part of the team starts clicking, every part of this team starts clicking off of each other. And I think that's what we've seen the last week.
All right, let's carry the Astros conversation on to the other side. When we get back on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, we got to talk about what's going to happen here with the starting rotation once Christian Javier comes back. Who's getting sent down? Is it Hunter Brown? Is it Spencer Arrighetti? And we also got to talk about Alex Bregman. I know he had a hit last night, but my God, the numbers are bad. They're so bad that they're on par with someone we thought was off the roster, only he has returned in the form of Alex Bregman. That, when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. The producers here at ESPN Radio. I am Brian McDonald, found on Twitter at SideByBback. To my right, Cam Smith, found on Twitter at ClutchCityCam. And of course, Sean Mapes, found on Twitter at Sean A. Mapes, our man behind the glass. Johnny Bilmer is on Twitter at ThirdCoastJohnny. So, as teased before we went into the break, we got to talk about some things upcoming here for the Houston Astros, including a decision on the starting rotation. But first, We got to talk about Alex Bregman. I know he had a hit last night. I don't care. I mean, he has just been absolutely abysmal. And for some reason, I don't know where you guys will weigh in on this or how you feel about it, but they've been messing with his spot in the lineup. You know, he was hitting kind of middle of the order to start the year. They try to move him up to the two spot, trying to avoid saying two hole for obvious reasons. With the idea of like hitting in front of Yordan's work for other people. Like, I mean, they did that with Pena. They've done that with Yuli in the past, where you put somebody in front of Yordan and magically, hey, they got a lot of really good pitches to hit, and they start hitting well. Didn't work for Bregman, and so for some reason they moved him into the fourth spot, which, I mean, it worked last night. You won the game. You score five runs a game. That would be obviously a pretty good offense. But I don't like the idea of him hitting fourth, simply because with all the runners in scoring position issues that the Astros have had, you got guys like Altuve and Tucker and Yordan actually getting on base, and then you have Alex Bregman coming up to drive them in when all you know he's going to do is pop up to the second baseman. I don't know where you hit Bregman, and Sean weigh in on it, but I hate the idea of him hitting fourth.
Yeah, it's a situation where the solution I envisioned before Friday's game was to just swap him and Pena, because Pena
he was hitting fifth or sixth depending on the game,
and because Pena is someone who's already shown that he can bat in the two hole. He was very sweet in the two hole during the 2022.
I know, I'm a child. Sorry.
During the 2022 playoffs. ALCS MVP, World Series MVP. So, and he's someone who's hitting well right now. It's not, I'm not saying put last year's Pena into the second spot in the lineup. I'm saying putting this year's Pena's batting over 300. Instead, Spada went with Tucker. Batting second, and then Bregman hitting fourth. I have the same issues with it as you do, where I know it's one spot in the lineup is ultimately what I'm saying, is have him bat fifth instead of sixth, but fourth.
Yeah.
But having your cleanup hitter be the worst batter in your lineup most nights
He's the worst hitter on in the everyday lineup right now. And I think overall, and we spent, I think, the first half or the first month of the season talking a lot about batting lineup and in lineup construction, and I think a lot of that talk is overrated, but I do think when you have your three best hitters getting on base, let's have somebody other than the worst hitter in the lineup trying to drive them in from this fourth spot. I don't know where you would hit Bregman, Cam, but, I mean, Sean says five. I don't even hate the idea of hitting him ninth. I mean, not only because he's your worst hitter, so let's get him fewer bats, but you have him hitting right in front of Altuve, and the one thing Bregman does do occasionally is draw walks, and now maybe you have someone on base when Altuve is hitting home runs, and hopefully, much like the idea of putting him in front of Yordan, maybe getting more balls to hit because they're more afraid of who's behind you, you could say the same thing for Altuve in that case, and at least here, Bregman's getting fewer bats and fewer times to hurt you by not driving in runs. Where would you hit Bregman, and what are your overall thoughts on this?
I mean, dropping him all the way to ninth is a pretty crazy thought, but
thank you.
But I'm not opposed to it because he is struggling. I mean, looking at like the stats, the fact that John Singleton has played in 8 less games and has like 50 less at bats, but has more runs and a higher average in OPS is just like astounding to me, because 2 weeks ago everybody was wanting to murder John Singleton and Jose Abreu, but here Singleton is putting up better statistics than Bregman is. But I think 9 might be a stretch, but I can definitely see like 6 or 7, because in the past he was walking even more. Like he doesn't even have a good strikeout to walk ratio this year like he has in the past. So it's not even just not getting hits. He's just flat out not getting on base.
You know what I think it is? Because, and hell, I even pointed to it just a minute ago. Like, and I think a lot of people would point to it. It's like, well, even if Alex Bregman doesn't have a high average, he's a guy that gets on base because he draws walks. But he's not drawing walks this year, I think, because much like we saw with Jose Abreu, where literally pitchers were getting to the point where they're throwing fastballs down the middle because F it, why not? He can't hit it.
Yeah.
I think they're seeing that with Alex Bregman. Like, why am I pitching around the edges of the strike zone when I could just serve something right down, like I don't have to avoid hot zones with Alex Bregman. He doesn't have one. If to drive home the point, and this is something I teased or said when I was teasing this segment, he's basically replaced Martin Maldonado this season. Martin Maldonado last season hit 191 with a 606 OPS. Hopefully Johnny Belmer doesn't fall on the floor when I read this stat, because it's definitely depressing. So again, Maldi last season, arguably the worst hitter in all of baseball as far as regular starters. 191 batting average, 606 OPS. Alex Bregman this season, 204, slightly better. 204 batting average, 552 OPS. He's more than 50 points lower in OPS than Martin Maldonado last season.
He has a negative.
He can't hit fourth.
He has a negative WAR. That's what's crazy to me.
He's a good defensive player, too. Yeah. So, I mean, that just tells the whole picture. Despite him being a plus defensively, he's still a negative WAR.
I never thought we'd get to that. Like, we always leave it late recently have debated, what are we going to do with Alex Bregman? But
not pay him.
I didn't think it was going to get to the point where we're literally talking about dropping him all the way down to 7, 8, 9, talking about him having a negative WAR. Like, that's never something I thought would come up in a conversation with him. But, I mean, here we are. So
I mean, okay, so we have some disagreement on where we would bat him. Obviously, we all agree he can't be in the top four, right? That's definitely a no-brainer. I would say you can't hit him above, or can't hit him above Pena right now. Fair. You can't hit him above Yonder Diaz.
Nope.
So now you're talking, what, at best, 6th or 7th?
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys are against my 9 spot idea, but where, I mean, 7?
It's 7, but there is an aspect of, and I think the protection goes a little too far when he's batting second. But I feel like you do need to give him something, like, you need to give, like, have Yiner Diaz behind him, or you have to have, like,
he hits 9th. Altuve's behind him.
Yeah, but come on.
I'm kind of with you, B-Mac. I'm kind of with you.
Thank you. See, I got one. It's 2-2. I got to bring one of you over to split the tie here.
There's just a little bit. It
feels like you're saying I'm overreactionary here.
It's overreactionary. It's also Alex Bregman, 2-time World Series champion.
Oh, you're saying back in the baseball
since
card,
Sean 2017. Mates? No, just part of this team's in 2017. Clubhouse leader, and it's like, yeah, you're hitting behind Joey Loperfido.
Joey Loperfido's got a hit in all 3 games he's played this season.
Small sample.
Loperfido's the truth.
I don't know, man. All right, so look. I know, and there was a massive homer take from Michael Schaub pointed out, and he's. I know that's surprising, right? And I like Michael Schaub. This is not meant to be an absolute shot at him, but he pointed out that, you know, Alex Bregman's always been a slow starter, and he's right. He always has. His lowest batting average for any month is March/April. Same thing with OPS. His only month of the when you look at his splits, the only month of his career where his OPS is below 800 is March-April, and it's at 737. And it's fine to point that out, saying, look, he always starts slow. He always starts slow. But, okay, his March-April for his career is 248. Now he's hitting 206. His OPS for his career in March, April, 737. Now it's below last year's Martin Maldonado. It's simple as just dismissing this as his normal slow starts, because it's so much further down than even his normal slow starts.
Well, and how many times are we going to use that excuse with him? It's slow start. Yeah, okay, but you've been in the big leagues for 6 or 7 years. You should be able.
He came up in 2016, I believe.
Yeah, you should be able to make adjustments, especially in the beginning of the year when the rest of the team was struggling. I mean, I feel like I'm overusing that. I mean, I know we use that excuse with the Astros because collectively it's a team, but as far as Bregman is concerned, like I'm over that. Oh, he's off to a slow start. Yeah, he is everywhere or every year. Like, switch up something. Like, you got to adjust something to where this isn't the excuse every single time we start the season.
And the start is, like BMAC laid out, so much worse. Yeah, it's so much worse than usual that it does lead you to go like, well, even if he does get it back to the rate that he normally
right.
gets it
what
back.
What does him returning to the mean even look like?
He's still not going to be the Alex Bregman that we all know and love.
Still not someone you want to hit in the fourth spot.
Yeah, exactly. So it is tough. I mean, ultimately, you just got to kind of stick with them. Like, you can't really you can't push the Jose Abreu button.
Send him to Florida.
The eject button. You can't really do that. So you just have to hope that. And I have more faith in Alex Bregman than I do Jose Abreu.
Well,
getting it
that's
back
a bold
together,
statement, Sean Mapes.
Considering he's batting twice as well as he is.
Abreu's sub .100 batting average right now. I mean,
206.
Forget the Mendoza line. I don't even know what line Jose Abreu's beyond. He's hitting like a pitcher back when we still had we didn't have the DH in the National League
back in your day.
Damn right. Okay. I didn't even
hitter.
Talk about, you know what was on the rundown I didn't even talk about? I was going to kind of play into the age joke that we do, but I was going to talk about the manufacturing runs. just like back in my day, damn it.
Suicide squeeze.
That's right. You get the runner on, you bunt him over, and then sack fly. Anyway, I'm going to move on.
Before Sean, we start
talking about establishing the run. That'll come in September. One more thing on the Astros. Well, this segment before we move on to other topics of conversation with them next segment. Christian Javier, as we mentioned last segment, looks like he's going to make at least one start with Corpus as far as a rehab start. Thinking maybe he'll be back after that, so maybe sometime next week, maybe the week after, depending if he needs a second one. But what move are you making? And maybe this is a question that doesn't even need answering because they go six-man rotation. But what are you doing with the rotation? Christian Javier comes in. Who's the odd man out to you right now? Is it Spencer Arrigetti, who actually looked, you know, pretty good in his last start, or at least better than he had? 5 2/3, I believe, two earned runs and 6 strikeouts in that last start against Cleveland. Or, you know, the guy with the prospect pedigree, but really been struggling. I believe his ERA is up over 9 right now. Hunter Brown. Like, what, Cam? If it is Arrigetti or Hunter Brown, and maybe even if it's not here with Javier, maybe this decision comes up in a few weeks after that when Urquidy comes back. Who are you moving out?
Man, that's tricky because you've seen great flashes from Hunter Brown. I don't really know what we expect out of Spencer. He has looked better than Hunter. I think that the Astros are going to stick with Hunter Brown. I would be okay with letting Spencer rip it a little longer because he is kind of on an upward pace. Let's see what he can kind of do. So I'm down with Spencer staying in the rotation when Javier comes back. But I feel like because it's Hunter Brown, that's Spencer's going to be the odd man out.
I mean, I feel like Hunter Brown, Sean, has better stuff. But if you look at recent results, Spencer Arrigetti's been better. And I also think it could play in, if Arrigetti's not going to be a starter, I don't think they want him in the bullpen because I think he needs to get everyday starts or a consistent spot in the rotation as he continues to develop. He's obviously much shorter into his major league career than Hunter Brown. But where would you weigh in on Hunter Brown v. Arrigetti?
I think short term you do the 6-man rotation just because, like we mentioned a little bit earlier, in May they have 2 off days in the month of May.
Yeah, they have a stretch where it's like 28 days or 29 days with 1 off day or something
like
that.
Yeah, and so I think for the short term, or I guess, you know, 28 days is short term, but for the next few weeks, you go with the 6-man and use the 3-ish starts that they're going to get in that
Is that, that like a final audition?
A little bit of it's close right now. Maybe it's less close in a couple weeks, and when Urquidy comes back, or you decide to go with a five man, that's when you make your final decision. If you're holding my feet to the fire, say I have to choose now. I think I would go with Hunter Brown.
Yeah, I mean he's got the stuff, and I will say in his last start, I thought he looked. It's hard to say he looked great because he gave up six earned runs, but I thought he did look.
It was a tough first inning and tough last inning.
And I didn't think he should come back out for that final inning. I think, you know, I believe when he came back out for that last inning, he was at five innings, three earned runs. I thought they should have left it there as a positive, and obviously it fell apart after that. All right, we got to get out on the other side of the break. I want to talk about a few comments from one of the national media members. One of the reasons for optimism for the Houston Astros, see if we buy into it. That when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. I assume you knew. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we're Johnny caught us in the middle of trying to figure out Joey Loperfido's nickname. I don't,
it's a conversation too contentious to have on air.
It is. Look, I feel like if we had the conversation on air, Johnny would have to leave the board to come separate us, because I think it might, especially now with Cam. You know, in the middle, Cam is—he's a known hothead. He's always flying off the handle.
Agent,
I think
agent of chaos. Agent
yeah,
chaos.
He's an agent of chaos.
So quick question: Are y'all upset with the J Lo?
It can't be J Lo.
I don't have a problem with.
We're trying not to fight, Johnny Belmer. Stop being the instigator.
I don't care.
Stop being the instigator.
What's wrong with it, B-Mac?
So Jim Bowden had some comments.
J-Bo.
Oh my God, Sean Mapes. The rest of the show is being held under
under martial law.
Yeah, turn off their microphones, Johnny. No, Johnny's probably on your side. So Jim Bowden, former Major League Baseball general manager for was it the Mets, Reds, doesn't matter, I don't care, has some thoughts on the Astros and a reason for optimism. Sorry, Sean. I think I killed Sean there. Has some reasons for optimism on the Houston Astros. I want to play this audio, see if you guys buy into what Jim Bowden had to say.
The only reason they're in the dweller is that they've had so many injuries to starters and they haven't had enough starting pitching depth to be able to withstand it. But look, Verlander looks like Verlander. After three starts, he has a 2.08 ERA. Before Valdez got hurt, he had a 2.6 ERA after three. And Christian Javier looked like the guy he was a couple of years ago. He had a 1.5 ERA after four starts before he got hurt. So all three of their starters have been dominating. Ronel Blanco has been a big story. He's 3-0 with a 1.6. So those are four starters that have been dominating with a combined ERA of 2. I mean, they've been really good. So why are they losing? Well, Hunter Brown is 0-4 with a 9.78 ERA. Spencer Arrighetti, not Spaghetti, but Arrighetti, is 0-3 with an 8.27. And J.P. France is 0-3 with a 7.46. So the unfortunate part for them, those guys have made 15 starts, and of the 15 starts, they've won none of them.
All right, before we get to whether his take was valid or not.
Reds and Nationals.
Arrighetti, not Spaghetti. Grade the joke, Sean Mapes.
D minus?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't even give it like C's get degrees. It's not even a pass. Well, actually, D would be a passing grade, no? I guess depending on how good of a higher institution of learning you're at.
You need to have a 2.0 to graduate most places.
Yeah.
Yep.
What would you grade it, Cam? What'd you think of that joke? From J-Bo.
Reds and Nationals, by the way.
C.
Okay, I got one of the teams right.
C, I guess.
Yeah, Cam, man, you're... Soft, Belmer, you got a thought on this joke?
Is there anything below F?
F-. You could be like John McClane and just say F-.
Yeah, F-. I've heard, how many people haven't said that yet? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that was a terrible joke. All right, but on to what Jim Bowden actually said. And Sean, you said he was a general manager for the Reds and who?
Nationals.
I don't care. All right. So the comment, that was a total setup. That was a total setup. I was kind of going for the Rocky. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Which NL East team he is the general manager.
It really doesn't. So his overall comments there, I think, echo what some of what we said in the first segment about, look, I mean, Verlander has been great in the starts he's made. Fromber's been, well, the first start against the Yankees wasn't amazing, but his overall numbers have been great. Javier, same thing. Renel Blanco, with the quality start last night, actually raised his ERA to 2.09, so he's been great. I mean, yeah, I mean, the Astros still are, what, 8 games under .500? But I think it's pretty easily explainable, despite the struggles from Alex Bregman, despite the you know, the lineup construction and maybe some problems driving in runners in scoring position. It's fairly easy and explainable. Why do the Astros have a losing record? It's because they've had three premier starters who have been hurt and missed multiple games this season. Is Jim Bowden right here?
I think there's certainly elements to it that are right. I mean, we've said it, that we expect this team, once their rotation gets some semblance of healthy, because it was already banged up heading into spring training, like way back in February.
As soon as they reported, Verlander was like, I'm not right.
Yeah, and then Verlander... And then once the season actually started, we've already had IL stints from Fromber and
Javier
on top of Verlander's, I guess, late start, because it wasn't really an acute injury. It was more just he just didn't have the ramp up that he wanted.
Right.
So it's 100% true that at some point the injured list for the Astros was literally their 2022 World Series winning rotation. Like, yeah, that is just a fact, and it is a fact that they will get better when those guys come back.
There was definitely a point in time where you could have put, like, the starting pitchers on the Astros injured list as, like, a top five rotation in baseball. I mean, so when you hear that, Cam, and you kind of look at the stats and getting some of these guys back, where does that leave your confidence? Like, okay, if Jim Bowden is right and these guys are healthy, Verlander's look great, Fromber, Javier look great, Blanco's look great, does that give you some confidence that they're actually going to turn this thing around and do what few teams have done before and make it back to the postseason despite the slow start?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way this team, I mean, look, they're struggling, we get that, but this team has too much talent. There's too many players that have played together for all these years to not expect them to be able to at least get back to 500 and make a push once everybody comes back healthy. And I agree with a lot of what he said. You know, obviously the top three pitchers for us this year have done really well, and then the bottom three have kind of struggled. But I mean, Spencer Urquidy, he never thought I don't think he had the expectation that he was ever going to pitch in the major leagues this year. And then it's not even just the bottom half of the rotation, but the bullpen that we usually count on was also struggling.
Good point.
So it just, everything just seemed to happen struggling at once: offense, bullpen, starting pitching. And now it just seems like everybody's starting to click. It just took a little longer than we're used to. But yeah, as soon as we get back Javier, if Urquidy comes back and he's looking at least decent, there's no reason why, especially in this division where I think Seattle's first place and they're only 2 games above 500, that they can't get back to the top.
Yeah, that is the silver lining if you're looking for one in the Astros' slow start. You know, despite being 12-20, they're still within reasonable reach of the division. Hell, last year, I believe into July, the Astros got as far back as 6.5 last year, and that was into July. Now, you know, they got 6 back, but it's still early in May, so there's certainly still time if the starting pitching figures itself out with guys getting healthy. All right, we're going to end the Astros conversation there. But if you have any thoughts on the Astros or what we're about to get into next with the Texans, give us a call on the HR&P listener line. We will take that call, 713-780-3776. Up next, Texans. Their draft is in the books. What are the moves they made in the draft, both with the guys they took and the positions they passed over, say about what they think for the roster coming up next season? That, when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. I'm Brian McDonald, found on Twitter at SackByBMAC. To my right, we have Cam Smith, found on Twitter at Clutch City Cam. Sean, who's on Twitter with a very professional Twitter handle of Sean A. Mapes. And, of course, our man behind the glass, Johnny Belmer, on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny. Before we get into the Texans our Texans conversation. Sean, let the listeners know where they can see. Not only can they hear us right now on the beautiful airwaves of ESPN 97.5.
Yes, you're hearing us right now, actually.
Yeah, exactly. But they can also watch us on
YouTube. We made listening, watching your favorite sports station even easier. You were officially streaming on ESPN Houston YouTube channel every single day. And, yeah, that's where you can see our beautiful faces. And you can talk to us easily, like user EDF1919 did. And he said, Joey Ropes, the next, with two X's, Joey DiMaggio.
Ooh, hold on. Slow down.
What do you think
down.
About that?
He's had three games. He's had three games. We got a
three-game hit streak.
Yeah.
Only 53 away from
53 from Joe
DiMaggio. What are we talking about? He's never had a game without a hit.
That, Sean, that is factually accurate. Yes.
Yeah. So if you also want to interact with us and comp Joey Loperfido to other
Hall of Famers.
Just go to YouTube, search ESPN Houston, and like and subscribe. It makes a big difference.
Yeah. What is the odd of Joey Loperfido reaching a hit streak? Or what are we putting it
at? Not zero.
You're right, because it's 0.1.
Not zero. You can't say it's zero.
I do like the effort there to put that on him. Maybe we call him Joey Ballgame, like Teddy Ballgame, like Ted Williams. Like what else are we gonna put on Joey? What other unreasonable expectations are we gonna put on Joey Loperfido? All right. As teased, let's get into some of this Texans conversation. I think while a lot of the draft picks, obviously. Because, you know, not a lot on the offense, or at least not at the skill positions. I know they drafted some offensive players, took a tackle in round two. But not a lot, you know, as far as like sexy, you know, draft picks that you would pick up in fantasy football, like the names that get you excited. Like, I don't know, last year when you took a quarterback and obviously the hometown product, the Tank Dell, in the third round. But I do think a lot of the selections or what they chose not to do are pretty telling about where they're at with the roster going into, you know, mini camp and training camp and everything that's left in the offseason. So let's start at left guard. They took an offensive lineman, as I said, in the second round. But it's a guy that they've told us time after time in these post-draft press conferences that they view as a tackle only. Of course, the Texans had, we thought, a big need at left guard. You don't know what you have with Kenyon Green. He misses all of last season with an injury. The season before, he was decent as a run blocker, but, you know, sucked everywhere else. So, I mean, I don't know what you guys think about their draft picks and what it says for left guard, but it basically says to me, despite, you know, what we would like to see from the left guard position, it seems like Kenyon Green, Sean, is going to get the first, second, and maybe even third opportunity to secure this job.
Yeah, and it does make sense. It's not what we would do, but we're also not the guys that drafted Kenyon Green in the first round.
That was the second first round pick. 15th or 16th overall pick, yeah.
Yeah, it was the second first round pick that Nick Caserio made was Kenyon Green. So, obviously, and despite his incredible draft record after that and before that.
It's really the only blemish.
Yeah, it's really the especially the only big miss, the miss of that, you know.
Yeah, I don't view anything in the sixth or seventh round as a blemish. They're all dart throws at that point.
And so, yeah, it's natural that, you know, the first round pick from 2022 is going to at least get a chance. Now, we would prefer that it's more of a – it's a competition with someone with a little bit more name value than Jared Patterson or Drew Scruggs or, you know, just spin a wheel, whoever doesn't win the center.
Random name generator.
Yeah. And so, or we definitely, I think we, well, maybe we don't, but there's another tackle
don't
that, they
say
could,
it.
That they could put at left
don't
guard
say it.
Against his wishes via Twitter.
He sucked at left guard, though. He wasn't good at left guard.
But
Kenyon Green might be worse.
Yeah, but if Kenyon Green also sucks, then
Titus Howard, what are we talking about?
You're putting your best five out there, and that could be the backup plan. Is plan A, Kenyon Green recovers from, his rookie year where he wasn't that good, and then his second year, which was completely taken away really, by injury. So maybe he gets back out there. Shows you why he was picked in the first round, Brian.
I think what I
backup plan, just put your best five out there, put Titus there.
I think what I hear you saying is Kenyon Green, comeback player of the year.
Possible.
I think that's
possible.
What I, but where are you with
no DeMar Hamlin this
where
year.
With you in the left guard, I don't know, position battle, if you will, Cam, in the overall offensive line?
I mean, to be honest, I know a lot of Texans fans were kind of shocked that they took Blake Fisher in the second round.
Right.
I really liked him. I was high on him. I was hoping that the Chargers would actually pick him up in the second round. I know that they already have Howard there in the right tackle spot. But the thing is there's never anything wrong with bringing in extra competition because it's going to bring out the most of people. And if Blake Fisher coming in can light a fire under Green, if he stays healthy, or Howard, then what's wrong with having a great backup plan? Especially since, I mean, how many more years is Howard and Tunsil under contract?
I mean, Tunsil's going to be under – he's going to retire here. I mean, he's I don't know what his contract is, but the numbers have been so high that I don't think they could get out of it even if they wanted to, not that they want to. Where I do think – what's interesting with Fisher there and kind of what you're hinting on there is not only what I say – even if he doesn't have the ability to move inside to one of the guard spots where you have more more of a need, Tunsil and Titus Howard have never proven they're guys that can play 100% of their games. They're not going to play 17 game. They're not going to make 34 starts. I think you're probably expecting both guys to miss at least two games. That's kind of who they've been. You're probably maybe even looking at one of them missing a third game. So Blake Fisher's going to have the opportunity to start this year at offensive tackle. And I think, obviously, Kenyon Green, this is a make or break year for him, but I think you could say kind of, and this is kind of what where you might have been going with this, Cam. I think you could kind of say the same thing for Titus Howard. Like there was a reason that the Texans paid him. He played well, but he's had now a couple years where he's either been hurt or they had to move him around. He didn't play particularly well. I think he does need to reestablish that he is their right tackle of the future. And if he doesn't play well this year, they might look at a scenario where they let him go and then make Blake Fisher going into year two, since he has at that point some more experience. I don't think you want to put a rookie out there protecting CJ Stroud, but once he has some more experience, maybe Blake Fisher does become the right tackle in year two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very realistic possibility. And also, you know, back to Kenyon Green, you're right. He was not good season or year one. He didn't even play year two. So if he struggles out of the gate again, I know Howard doesn't like the guard position, but at least he has some experience to where you can swing him to that and start Blake Fisher, because there's nothing wrong with having an offensive lineman on your team that can be that swing player to where they can fill in a game here, a game there, and, you know, give you positive production. Like it's kind of like cornerbacks. You can never have enough decent cornerbacks.
Yeah,
you can never have enough decent linemen.
That was one of the things Nick Caserio said as to one of the reasons they drafted Blake Fisher. You're right. You can never have enough offensive tackles, and two, they didn't really have any outside. I mean, look, name another offensive tackle. You know, I mean, I guess people probably could name Charlie Heck, but they didn't have a lot of quality names behind Tunsil and Howard at the offense. What was that?
Michael Dieter.
My point exactly. They didn't have quality names that you would want starting. When Tunsil and Howard missed their obligatory two games each, they didn't have any names that you're like, okay, we're fine. Like, I think it makes sense to add at least depth to that for those games they missed.
Even look at the depth chart now, and Blake Fisher hasn't even stepped onto the Texans field, and he's already listed above Charlie Heck.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, Heck is not somebody you really want to depend on. All right, let's look at a couple more positions. Oh, my God. All right. Did you hear that, Johnny? Okay, see, Johnny, be glad. All right, Sean, grade the joke before we move on. I mean, Cam, this is your debut episode.
B-.
Oh, I'm not expecting
B-.
it.
B-?
Okay. I think it was a B-.
I'll back off.
The shock factor.
Yes.
I was blindsided.
I wasn't expecting it. I don't know. My debut episode.
Blindside,
here.
Nice. Tied into the line.
Oh, my God. Wow. See, okay. Now you
grade that one.
C-. All right, let's move on. Okay, you got to step up the joke game. All right. Next one we got to talk about here. I think a lot of us wanted the Texans to draft a defensive tackle for the position next to DeNico Autry. They added Mrs. Foley's baby boy. I'm not even going to...
Foley Fatu Costa.
Thank you. We did that bit a couple weeks ago. Yes, thank
you. Not that hard.
I know, but I'm not even going to attend that. I can barely get the Rockets head coach right half the time. I'm not going to try for Foley. But I think with Foley and Tim Settle there at defensive tackle, the defensive tackle spot next to Danico Autry, I think a lot of Texans fans were hoping to add a bigger name, even though that line already has, you know, three Pro Bowlers essentially on it. So maybe it was a little bit greedy. But I think this draft, with not adding somebody there until, I guess it was the sixth or seventh round with Marcus Harris,
yeah.
The defensive tackle out of Auburn. I think what this tells us is Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, Sean, are, despite what we thought going into the draft, think Tim Settle and Foley good enough.
Yeah, and it is something where if you're going to be deficient in one place, one place on your defensive line, being like the run-plugging defensive tackle,
sure.
is like, it's not the worst thing in the world, because the most teams aren't going to try to just run the ball at you for 40 times
especially
a game.
When you play sub packages like 70% of the time.
Yeah, you're going to be a nickel anyway. So having D'Amico Autry be able to play on the inside and that being your defensive tackle, that in a lot of matchups, that is just going to be fine. You can get by with Tim Settle and Foley Fatukasi being the depth pieces there. So I think to me, it's just more interesting that I feel like we learned something about Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans' kind of overall philosophy on how to build the defense, which is that at least D'Amico Ryans, who I assume has a lot of the say in this, especially
on the defensive side,
the front seven of the defense, is that he is prioritizing the passing game and rushing the passer, as opposed to having more of a balanced front that you would, you know, kind of draw up in your mind.
All right, so yeah, I definitely agree with that. And Nick Caserio had some comments as well, and it makes me a little bit interested in Marcus Harris, who, even though undersized, has shown some ability to get after the passer. So I do think you're right. They don't really value the run pluggers. A guy like Tavondre Sweat, I don't think was ever going to be even considered, even if he didn't have, you know, the problems with drinking and driving just a few weeks before the draft. They just don't really value that kind of skill set, I think,
yeah.
As the defensive tackle. Maybe that was a reason why they let guys like Rankins and Malik Collins go as well.
I think they have a lot of faith in their linebackers that can plug in that gap.
And let's carry that over, because I think there's some conversation to have there with the linebackers as well. Also, safety, running back, and wide receiver if we have time. That on the bullpen when we return in just a couple minutes on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the Board of Directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.